In Germany during World War II, two brothers named Rudolf and Adolf, by the way, the Olf means wolf, and it's spelled O-L-F, so it's kind of interesting. Rudolf and Adolf Dassler owned their own shoe company called Dassler Brothers Shoe Factory. Rudolf and his family were in a bomb shelter during an Allied bombing raid when Adolf joined them. The first thing Adolf said was, "Here are the bloody blankety blanks again." The word he used wasn't too bad, but it's just not a word I want to use in church, okay? "Here are the bloody blankety blanks again," referring to the bombers. Well, Rudolf thought that Adolf was talking about him and his family. How could he get that? But what, you know, I don't know. And no one could convince him otherwise. So after the war, they dissolved the business and each formed their own companies. Adolf named his after himself, combining his nickname, Adi, with the first three letters of his last name. Rudolf originally called his Ruda, but then tweaked it to share a name with a certain wildcat. All right, anybody guess the names of the two companies? Nope. What's the wildcat? I heard it. Puma, yeah. Oh, and by the way, it's not pronounced the way that most of you, it's Adidas, Dassler, Adidas. And now, you know, it's funny, I heard that, I ran track, and I used to always wear Adidas shoes, cross-country shoes. I mean, I was a sprinter, but anyway, I won't get into that. But I heard that years ago, and I'm like, yeah. But I always thought it was like a South American country, Adidas, but I'd heard Adidas. Well, now it makes sense. Two German companies, and their headquarters are still in Germany, by the way. I can't pronounce the name, starts with a B. Well, our passage this morning, I'm going to tell you 1, 2, and 3 later. So you got to wait for that. You got to stay awake for the whole sermon almost. See? There's a method to my madness. Well, our passage this morning is also about two brothers, two Christian brothers who are partners in ministry, and they separate because of a disagreement. A conflict occurs because one Christian brother resolves to do something, and the other Christian brother is going to have nothing to do with it. He absolutely refuses to go along with it. Well, I invite you to turn in your Bibles to Acts chapter 15. Verse 35. Our passage actually starts at 36, but I'm going to start with 35 just to give us some context. So you can find that on page 1099 if you're using the Bible that's in the seat pocket. Page 1099, Acts chapter 15, verse 35. But Paul and Barnabas remained in Antioch, teaching and preaching the word of the Lord with many others also. And after some days, Paul said to Barnabas, "Let us return and visit the brothers in every city where we proclaim the word of the Lord and see how they are." So here's the context and the setting of our passage this morning. Paul and I keep wanting to call him Barney. Maybe that's sacrilegious, I don't know, but Paul and Barnabas are in Antioch preaching and teaching the word of the Lord. Things are going great. So Paul suggests a road trip to cities where they had preached before. And by the way, we remember they've been persecuted in some of these cities. In fact, Paul has been stoned in one of them. So is that a good idea? Let's go back and let's get stoned again. You know, that sounds like a great idea, doesn't it, Barnabas? Well, let's see how Barnabas responds in verse 37. Now Barnabas wanted to take with them John called Mark. So it's implied that Barnabas approves the idea, and he wants to take along Mark. And by the way, that word wanted, it's too soft. I think some of the other translations do better. Some of them translate it as purposed. Or determined. This was a strong one. This wasn't just what do you think about taking Mark? No, he wants to take Mark along with him. They're going, Mark, sounds like a good idea. What could be wrong with that? Well, Paul responds in verse 38. But Paul thought best not to take with them one who had withdrawn from them in Pamphylia and had not gone with them to the work. Remember, we read about this weeks ago, and I said, this is going to come back into the story. Well, here it is. Again, thought best is too soft. Some English translations say that they translate it, Paul insisted that they take Mark. That's what's going on here. Why? Because he left them. We read about that in Acts 13:13. So Barnabas strongly wants to take Mark, and Paul strongly doesn't want to take Mark. The conflict has now escalated, and you can cut the tension between these two brothers with a knife. Well, verse 39a continues and tells us what happened. First part of verse 39. And there arose a sharp disagreement, so that they separated from each other. Now, we should have seen that coming, I guess. Mark issue was irreconcilable. Paul and Barnabas, they were not willing to budge. They weren't willing to compromise based upon what they thought needed to happen. In their minds, they could only go their separate ways. Now, if you haven't read ahead or know the story, what do you think they're going to do? What would you do? What would you be tempted to do? Well, if you're in the side of the church, we need to take the issue to the church leaders for resolution. We need either, Paul needs to be made to take Mark along, or, the other way, whatever. We try to get people to force a decision sometimes, don't we? Perhaps you've had a sharp disagreement with someone you've been in a close partnership with. It could be a spouse, it could be a friend, family member. And what happens sometimes? Discouragement, anger, perhaps giving up on a mission, bad-mouthing your ministry partner. People in churches split for all kinds of reasons. Silly ones. I Googled my phone this morning while I always go through the notes and everything. Tom Rainer he put out on Twitter, and he came and he wrote a blog thing about 25 reasons why churches split. Silly ones, And they're not the color of the carpet. There's color, carpet, paint, of course, all those. But he did some ones. One of them was the church budget was off by 10 cents. 10 cents? what a problem that is. Well, I guess it was solved by somebody donating a dime. So somebody came up and said, all right, I got a dime for the church budget to resolve that issue. Well, verses 15:39, the last part of verse 39 of chapter 15 to 16:4 tells what they did. Barnabas took Mark with him and sailed away to Cyprus. But Paul chose Silas and departed, having been commended by the brothers to the grace of the Lord. And he went through Syria and Cilicia, strengthening the churches. Paul came also to Derbe and to Lystra. A disciple was there named Timothy, the son of a Jewish woman who was a believer. But his father was a Greek. He was well spoken of by the brothers at Lystra and Iconium. Paul wanted Timothy to accompany him, and he took him and circumcised him because of the Jews who were in those places, for they all knew that his father was a Greek. As they went on their way through the cities, they delivered to them for observance the decisions that had been reached by the apostles and elders who were in Jerusalem. So Paul and Barnabas split, but they don't skip a beat. What do? They do the same thing separately that they were going to go together. They're just in different places. Barnabas went off to where he was from, Cyprus, took Mark with him. And Paul goes back to, those churches that they had been to. And it's interesting that we have to kind of look back at this and say, Luke is writing this, and Luke is Paul's companion. We don't exactly know if he was companion at this point, or if he was with him later, and he's you know, writing back, but he's probably likely with him. So what's he naturally going to do? He's going to write about Paul. So you sort of have to kind of assume, it's kind of implied that Barnabas is, you know, doing the same thing. He's going, you know, preaching to the folks in Cyprus, on the island of Cyprus. Now, did you pick up some irony in these verses? What does Paul do? Paul wants someone to accompany him, a young guy named Timothy. Now, what I find, I just find it hilarious looking. It's a different Greek word for want than was used earlier when Barnabas wanted to take Mark. It's a softer word. It's not like Paul is being adamant, but it's like sometimes it's translated as wish. So when you see maybe a wish or something like that, it's the same word. It's a softer wish. So Paul wants Timothy to go along with him, and so Timothy joins Paul and Silas. And what's part of their mission? Part of their mission is to pass along the decision, not just to hear it, but just to obey the decision that had come about based upon the issue that was brought up earlier. They had to come to a decision about it. And what were the decisions that were made? Acts 15:29 tells us that you abstain from what has been sacrificed to idols, and from blood, and from what has been strangled, and from sexual immorality. If you keep yourselves from these things, you will do well. Farewell. So what was the issue that was a big problem at Antioch? Circumcision. Some had come down from Judea saying that unless you are circumcised according to the custom of Moses, you cannot be saved. Find that in Acts 15:1. And then some in Jerusalem, when they went back to Jerusalem to talk about it, some said that you Gentiles must be circumcised. So they wrote to the believing Gentiles what they should do to remain in harmony with the Jewish Christians. It's all about harmony and working together. Say, okay, we're going to be in community now. What can we do? Well, circumcision was not obviously one of them. All right? So now what do we find odd in this passage? What does Paul do? Paul circumcises Timothy. Paul, wait a second. I thought we just had this big argument that circumcision wasn't required. Seems odd, doesn't it? Isn't Paul contradicting himself? Oh no, au contraire. So why does Paul have Timothy circumcised? We could go on a lot of this, but it just basically boils down to the ability of Timothy to minister to the Jews. He was a Jew. He was part Jewish. And if he wasn't circumcised, he was basically an apostate Jew. His part Jewishness made no difference to the Jews around him. And he would not have been able to have an effective ministry. And you kind of get that. It's certainly hinted at here. But that's what's going on. An uncircumcised man of a mixed Jewish marriage is an apostate Jew. Jews wouldn't have anything to do with him. And they probably wouldn't have anything to do with Paul either. Why? Because he was associating with this apostate Jew. So for the sake of the gospel and for sake of the ministry, it wasn't for salvation. It wasn't necessary of every Gentile. But for Timothy, it was. So what's the result of all of this? I think this is very similar to other way Luke has ended some of the other passages that we've looked at. Verse 5, so the churches were strengthened in the faith and they increased in numbers daily. So how's that for a church growth strategy? Hey, let's have a disagreement. It isn't as far-fetched as it sounds, is it? Two guys have an argument and they go their way and growth still happens. Sounds like Adidas, and Puma, right? They split, and they're still growing strong. Adidas is number 2 in worldwide sports apparel, and Puma is number 3. Under Armour was a common guess. Maybe Under Armour is under Puma. I have no idea. Who's number 1? Nike, yeah. Nike's number 1. By the way, it is a strategy for companies to split sometimes. You know, they're better separate, you know. Rudolf and Adolf, what do? They take their talents, they split, and the companies are still going strong. They're still number 2 and 3. I don't know what they were back in the 40s. Paul and Barnabas have successful ministries separately, and the church is growing. It's stronger as a result. You could make that argument. Well, pull out your sermon note sheets as we kind of just see what we can glean from this passage and reflect back. I've been trying to turn these narrative passages into exhortations for us. So here's our exhortation for today from our passage. Disagreements must make us stronger. Disagreements must make us stronger. Why? Disagreements are inevitable. Have you ever met a human being that hasn't had a disagreement? No, of course not. Have you ever met a church that hasn't had a disagreement? If you do, they're not a, I don't know how you can do that, you know? Well, that's, you know, disagreements are inevitable. That's the point of 1 Corinthians 11 that Joey read earlier. Factions cause divisions and disagreements, and they happen in order. Why? To see who is genuine. It's kind of convicting, isn't it? Are you genuine this morning? Have you been on the right? Or, and by the way, just because you win the argument doesn't mean you're genuine. You could lose the argument and be genuine, all right? It's not a matter of winning or losing the argument. It's about the matter of being like Christ through the argument. Still staying on mission and not getting discouraged. It's hard, isn't it? This is where the rubber meets the road in many churches. Now, a lot of times it could be just a simple misunderstanding. How stupid was it for Rudolph to think, right? I always get the guys mixed up. I think Adolf was the guy that thought, you know, like, how dumb is that? But that's what happens. We misunderstand each other, and sometimes we're firm and we're staunch in that misunderstanding. We refuse to try to come to an understanding. That's what church is all about. It should be Christians about it. People who are genuine Christians want to work together and try to figure out a way to resolve disagreements. Disagreements kill churches, but they don't have to. They can make us stronger, and they should, and they can. Now notice one of the great things that I learned, I think I learned this outside of seminary, was to look at the structure of the passage. And I've tried to highlight this a lot as we've been going through these various passages we've looked at over the last 2 years. Look at the structure of this passage. How does it begin and end? It essentially ends in sharp disagreement, and it ends with growth. We need to turn our disagreements into strengths. And if you notice, there's a bit of a sandwich here. There's a bit, we call them sandwiches, but they're brackets. The technical word is an inclusio, where you have something, and then you have another thing, and this thing provides brackets. Well, what's bracketing our passage today? In 1541, in the middle, we, you know, towards the end, we have strength in verse 41, and then verse 16:5, we have strength. And what's in the middle? What's the meat of our sandwich? They delivered a decision that resolved a disagreement. Resolving disagreements in a godly way makes us stronger. If we don't, it makes us weaker. So here's the first point that I took away from this passage. We can disagree about our personal mission. Paul and Barnabas disagreed. We can disagree about our personal mission. It was Barnabas's personal mission, desire to take along Mark. It was not Paul's, and that's okay. Trouble comes when we try to force our mission on others, and perhaps you've experienced that. You know, whether it's Awana, I couldn't even think. You know, Awana takes a lot of part of church, and not, you know, it's like, you know, some people get on the Awana kick, and it's like everybody has to be involved. No. That's, if you want to have an Awana ministry, that's your decision. Don't make everybody do it. should be a church-wide decision, or you know, whatever. You know, maybe I'm bringing up some bad blood here, but you know, don't try to make your personal mission everybody's mission, because that's wrong. I think it's great that Michaela's, you know, Prosecco's, Michaela, you know, we do the dog show every year. And it takes effort, people. And that's great. Volunteer, you know, help out. It's something good that, you know, that the church does to try to reach out. But I've never had this sense that they're trying to force that on everybody. I think if you get that idea, you've gotten the wrong idea, you know. Sometimes that could be a misunderstanding on your part. So we just need to be careful. Somebody could just be on fire for something. But have the ability to say no. That's your mission. That's not mine. Okay? Now, I think it's interesting that Barnabas's mission did bear fruit. Paul writes in Colossians 4:10, Aristarchus, my fellow prisoner, greets you, and Mark, the cousin of Barnabas. We learn that Mark was Barnabas' cousin, concerning whom you have received instructions. If he comes to you, welcome him. You know, Mark's still in the picture. And then in 2 Timothy 4:11, Paul says, this is great. Paul says, Luke alone is with me. Get Mark and bring him with you, for he is very useful to me for ministry. Isn't that great? Barnabas discipling Mark turned him into a guy that Paul one day welcomed. I think that's what this is all about. On New Year's Eve at London's Garrick Club, British dramatist Frederick Lonsdale was asked by Seymour Hicks to reconcile with a fellow member. The two had quarreled in the past and never restored their friendship. You must, Hicks said to Lonsdale. It is very unkind to be unfriendly at such a time. Go over now and wish him a happy new year. Guy's trying to reconcile two people. So Lonsdale crossed the room and spoke to his enemy. I wish you a happy new year, but only one. Well, that was not, obviously that was a nice try. That really wasn't gonna work, was it? But Christians should be great examples of being able to strongly disagree about something, but not let it get to you. Sometimes you have to strongly some of us are like really harmony types. You know, we like to have harmony in everything. And it's difficult to say no sometimes. We need to learn how to strongly disagree and remain friends and pursue the personal mission that God has given each one of us. And we can be passionate about that. Number two. So number one, we can disagree about our personal mission. Number two, we can't disagree about our discipling mission. We can't disagree about our discipling mission. We all have one mission. It's the same mission. It's to go and to make disciples of all nations. That's the mission that we have, that is exactly the same. We are to make disciples. We're to be disciples. So you're either supposed to be a disciple or make disciples. And really, you're supposed to be both, right? We should all be making disciples. And if you don't have the ability to make disciples, then learn how. That's one of the reasons we're having our men's meeting on Sunday night, is to learn how to be disciples and go towards maturity so that we can disciple. We can't disagree about our discipling mission. Paul and Barnabas disagreed about their personal mission, but they kept on the overall mission. It was important to them. They both returned to strengthen the churches, to share the message that the elders and the apostles had come up with. They strengthened the faith of individual disciples. That's how we get strong churches. Strong churches are made up of strong individual disciples. If we do that, we're going to increase. Discipling strengthens faith And by the way, this is I've decided to turn our Wednesday evening prayer time. It's still focused on prayer, but it's basically a discipling session in one sense. We are going through the prayers of the Bible, and we're learning how to meditate as we go through the prayers, with learning how to pray better. The Puritans were great at meditation. You know, they were just like, they're awesome. So what's the difference between reading and meditation? Here's a simple illustration. Reading is like gobbling down a meal. You know, you're just kind of going through it. You know, meditating is like chewing it, enjoying it, savoring it, looking at all the you know, noticing, wow, I notice that there's cumin in that wow, I really enjoy it, or cilantro, or whatever you like. You know, it's like, you know, you hear people talking about coffee that way. I heard there's notes of whatever, you know, chocolate or fine wines, you know, there's, oh yeah, you know, it's just funny hearing people talk about that stuff. But you enjoy it, you savor it. We need to learn how to do that with Scripture. And the pure, and basically, you can make the point that you will not reach the same level in your maturity as a Christian unless you are doing what David does. Oh, how I love your law. I meditate on it night and day. So we're doing that on Wednesday nights with a focus on prayer, going through the prayers of the Bible so that we can learn how to be more faithful, biblical prayers. All right. What is the specific thing that their mission did? It's the only, maybe it's not the only, it's the thing that's highlighted. They delivered the decisions that had been reached by the apostles. Why? Because somebody wanted to add something to salvation. And I'm not going to repeat my sermon from 3 weeks ago, but when you add circumcision to salvation, it's not grace anymore. When you add anything to salvation except God's work through Jesus Christ in saving you from your sins, if you add anything to that besides His work, you're adding something to salvation. God changes us. He sends His Spirit to us. It's a work that He does. And by the way, our next prayer that we're going to look at is Ephesians chapter 3. We've already done part of Ephesians, but we looked at chapter 1. Now we're going to do chapter 3, verses 14 to 21. Well, years ago, a large statue of Christ was erected high in the Andes on the border between Argentina and Chile. I think that's how you pronounce it. Chilean way, anyways. The statue is called Christ the Redeemer of the Andes. The statue symbolizes a pledge between the two countries that as long as the statue stands, there will be peace between Chile and Argentina. Shortly after the statue was erected, though, the Chileans began to protest that they had been slighted. Why had the protest been did they protest that they had been slighted? Because the statue faced Argentina and the statue's back was towards Chile. All right? Well, just when tempers were at its height, a newspaper man saved the day in an editorial that not only satisfied the people but made them laugh. He simply said, "The people of Argentina need more watching over than the people of Chile." All right, wasn't that great? That's the spirit we need to have. The word of the Lord that Paul and Barnabas were preaching is that we all need watching over. Every one of us, non-Christians and Christians, we all need Jesus to stand between us. Think about if, as we have in the arguments, if we've got Jesus standing there, just would you be able to have that same kind of argument? We need to have Jesus at the center, in a sense, of all our arguments. If Jesus is there, would we be having the same argument in the same way? No, I don't think so. We need to have Jesus not only between us but between us and God. Jesus came to reconcile God and man and reconcile us to each other. If we're not reconciled to each other, we're not living out the gospel. How can we be witnesses to a world that God has reconciled us to Him if we're not being reconciled to each other? It's a picture of the gospel when churches operate and disagree and can work through that. Jesus died and rose again so that we can all have peace with God. So, perhaps you've had hurts. You know, as I'm thinking about this passage, it's interesting that it comes up in this time. You know, I'm just preaching through Acts. I'm not picking out, you know, that's one of the things people say, well, you know, you're preaching right at me this morning. Well, no, I'm just walking through Acts. And we can have it speak to us. Have you made peace? You know, perhaps you've been on the wrong end. You've been the person that's been a jerk, you know. Just ask forgiveness. And that's one of the reasons that we, you know, it's interesting that disagreements is in the context of the Lord's Supper that we're going to celebrate. It's a time to make those things right with yourself, right with the Lord, and, you know, right with each other as well, right? Let's pray.